Welcome to Eagle Eye.
What a break from Manoa.
Interviewing your favorite USA Eagles around the globe.
Tony Limbaugh into the 22.
Now, here's your host, Bill Baker.
Hey, everybody, welcome. I've been really looking forward to this interview. I've been working on getting him for a long time. I have former USA rugby captain, former Saracen, and now entrepreneur Chris Wiles. Chris and I have a great conversation about the obvious, beer. Specifically, all about Wolfpack Lager, who he founded with Saracen teammate Al Hargraves. And what styles do they brew? What's the craft brew industry like in Europe right now? And what about the social media presence? It's hilarious. You gotta check it out. Also, what were the difficulties starting the business? You know, how has COVID affected them? And what happened to them specifically when the league was coming down on Saracens and other teams removed Wolfpack Lager from their concessions? And, all right, we do talk a little rugby as well. So, grab yourself a pint. Enjoy. I really appreciate you jumping on with me. I know you're a busy man and all that, but
it's good to finally connect. By the way, we've never had the opportunity to connect throughout the year. So yeah, it's good to finally meet over Skype.
I was talking to Dallin the other day, and I said, "Dude, how'd you get Wiles, man? I've been trying to talk to him, trying to reach him forever." He says, "Yeah, well, we play together, so we have that going." So I have you here to talk about, two of my favorite things, fish and chips. Well, no, just kidding. Rugby and beer, obviously. How are you doing? How is Wolfpack doing at this point?
Yeah, it's I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. Wolfpack is actually, it's faring. The hospitality business here in the UK has been hit pretty hard, as you can imagine, as the same has happened in the US. So it's certainly not been the easiest 8 to 9 months, but all things said and done, we're in a good position. The government has given a decent amount of support for hospitality businesses, and it looks like the light is at the end of the tunnel with the vaccine and being able to come through it. But, because we've got a pretty strong brand in sort of local community areas here in London, we've fared pretty well when we've opened up. People really want to come out and support local businesses. So, all things said and done, I think we're in a good position. I know there's been some really difficult stories in hospitality during COVID, and unfortunately, we're not in that position.
Now, were you shut down for a while, and for how long?
Yeah, we were shut down in the first lockdown for about 4 months.
Wow.
We were doing some takeaway and some delivery, but we were essentially shut down, and we've been shut down for the last month here for this most recent lockdown, and we're unlikely to open up in Christmas. We will probably wait until the new year and just see where things get to with this tiered system here in the UK.
Now, I don't want to get all drastic on here, but do you guys have a breaking point? I mean, obviously, I think you guys are doing pretty well until everything happened, but business-wise, you have to be planning for something like that just in case.
Well, no, and we were able to, in opening up in between the two lockdowns helped out, and we've got some decent cash reserves. We've definitely tried to plan it out as meticulously as possible and leaned on other people in the industry to help out and make sure that we're, open to learning how best to stay afloat. We've had lots of conversations. We've been very meticulous about it. So we're in a good position. If this goes on through spring to summer, I think, that could be interesting. I think that could be very interesting for most businesses if that happens. But again, it's difficult to necessarily predict what then the government will do for in support. So these things are all quite fluid.
Right. Now, you said you were able to do takeout, and are you able to do delivery there?
Yes. Yeah. In the first lockdown, we did deliveries out of our Wolfpack Defender.
Oh, nice.
We've got taps on the side. And actually what we did is we went out and just delivered free pints. We had liquid left over, kegs left over, and we just thought, it was probably about 2 or 3 months into our lockdown. We thought, what do the people need? The people need a beer. They need it for free. So Al and I went out in the Defender and delivered pints. It was fun because people just direct messaged us on Instagram and just gave us their address, and we just turned up.
That's amazing. So you weren't just like knocking on doors. Hey, you want a pint?
Yeah, well, it kind of ended up being that as well, though, because people on the street were just shouting, hey, do you want a pint? And people would run over. And when we parked it, our first bar is in Queen's Park, an area in Northwest London. And we just parked it, the Defender, right on the edge of the park and said to people, come and get your, because you can pour it. You can free pour a pint yourself. All COVID safe, obviously.
Of course.
All COVID safe. So yeah, we managed to get some Wolfpack Lager out to the good people in Northwest London.
That's brilliant. And it appears by your social media that due to social distancing rules, the only way to serve beer is by throwing it and catching it. I think that's a brilliant.
The story there is Al runs our social media and he's brilliant. He loves coming up with sort of quirky ideas. And just all of a sudden it's like a video popped up of Al catching a pint. And I was like, hold on, Al, how many takes is that? that looked really easy for you. He's like, literally, I promise you. It was my first take. I caught it. I was like, right, let's do this together. And so we just started doing more and more videos around catching pints and catching cans. And I don't want to, it comes across like it's super skillful. Yeah. And I guess being, because Alistair, you know, he was a Saracens captain and he's played rugby for the Springboks. He's in the line now. He's in the second row, good hands. It does make it look a lot harder than it really is, I think. But that might just be that we, I suppose, being sportsmen, we can actually catch.
Lots of practice. Yeah, there's one where the beard drops down from the second floor, and when he grabs it, I don't think it dripped any. But it looked like half a pint because his hands are so big. Just walks off. Yeah. No, that's great.
He is good at catching. I'll give him that.
So going back, at what point during your rugby career did you think, okay, a brewery is my post-rugby plan?
Well, we the whole way through my time at Saracens, they were always very keen on us looking at life after rugby. It was one of the big, I'd say one of the hallmarks of that Saracens culture is that they really looked after the people in terms of making sure we were focused in life after rugby. And so I was doing various internships. I was always curious about what my friends were doing. I knew that there was a short shelf life to being a professional sportsman. And Alistair had moved over from South Africa to join Saracens at just the right time when him and I were very keen to sort of scratch this entrepreneurial itch. And we just met ourselves at the right time in the right place. And so we just started bouncing ideas around with each other. And this was about 2012, 2013 during our Saris career. And we would always meet after training for a coffee, and then a coffee turned into a beer.
Yeah.
Inevitably with him and I. And so one day we were just, you know, I think it was Al just went, let's just start a brewery. He was like, yeah, let's do it. And so that momentum just built from there. And we, you know, it was really around this idea of learning by doing. I was keen to jump into doing an MBA, but actually through chatting with Al, we just thought, let's just forget the books, you know, let's just do this. Let's do it, you know, let's learn by potentially making some failures and learning the hard way, rather than diving back into the academics of it. So that was the impetus, really. And it was all around this idea of let's put ourselves in a better position when we retire. We didn't think it was still, you know, we had ambitions that it could become a successful business, but the really key message for us was if we started a business, ran it for 2 years and then it failed, we then have a point of reference, a conversation to have with people when it came to an interview or to dealing with life after rugby. So, and then as it happens, it kind of went from strength to strength.
Now we're all pretty much master consumers, but did you go out and get yourself a home kit and brew some yourself, or is it just, yeah?
We've got some, I actually wish we'd done more video. And I don't even know if there is a video kicking around, but of us trying to do home brews and it just failing spectacularly. And we did, you know, it is kind of a running joke. We did our fair bit of research. It didn't take, you know, there wasn't enough, there was enough ambition for us to go and get involved in research and beer, right? Wasn't too hard of it. It wasn't a chore. Right. So there was lots of tasting. Again, lots of tasting, obvious thing to do. And then some really like badly made home brews. Yeah.
So you talked about other internships, other positions. So are there other jobs that you may have done that you're really happy you didn't do?
Yeah. I mean, one of them was kind of in this big business here in the UK, sort of a management consultant, accountancy firm. And it was so big that when we came for a meeting, and this was actually quite a defining moment in my kind of thinking about getting into business and or into an entrepreneurial business, was the staff came into our meeting and had to introduce each other to each other before saying hello to us. And I thought, well, that's just not the kind of environment I want to be in. Hmm. That's such a big business. There's so many people that you don't even know each other in that kind of way. And, you know, everything we've learned through rugby and sport and it's all about the people and the relationships. So that was there. Yeah, that was quite a big moment. So, yeah, I'm glad I'm not doing, you know, in accountancy or sort of generic management consultancy.
Sitting behind a desk.
Yeah, exactly.
So exactly. with the starting this brewery with you and Al, what were some of the main difficulties that you've experienced so far, or at least at the very beginning of getting going?
I'd say having to learn about essentially the whole business. But that was all. It's an obvious challenge, but we didn't have any background in hospitality before going into the brewery. We didn't have any background in pubs and bars. You know, we were, as you know, rugby players, and so we had a huge amount of learning to do. But that was also the exciting bit. I think the other kind of challenge was making sure we took it sort of professionally, and rather than it being something, oh, it's, you know, you have 2 days off a week during your playing weeks, and you do need those days to sort of unwind and kind of physically recuperate. But we were aware of that. And in the same breath, we wanted to make sure that if we were going to start a business, we were going to give it its, you know, respect and time and diligence to make sure we were doing as much as possible to make it a success rather than it just kind of being a sideshow. Of course, it was going to be a sideshow to the main career of rugby, but right. We wanted to make sure that we gave it every opportunity to succeed. So it was kind of wrestling with that concept a bit was a challenge because, you know, often in those days off, you wake up as rugby players, you know, you walk out of the house at 11 o'clock for your first coffee, have a nap, come back, have a nap, and then walk out for, you know, 2 o'clock for your next coffee. So we had to shift into a very different way of thinking and sort of operating in our days off and with our time.
Right. Let's talk about research. So I'm not sure what the landscape looks like as far as microbreweries and craft breweries in Europe in general. And when I was over in Ireland about 5 years ago, it seemed to be the beginning of their microbrew and craft brew era, let's call it, you know, Galway Bay Brewery and a few others. So when were you starting, were there other breweries, microbreweries that you could actually do your research from?
Yeah. Yeah, the craft beer movement obviously was behind the US. So we did, you know, there's some kind of interesting stories in the US that we kind of researched into, Goose Island being one of them. More kind of, I suppose, famous brewery at the time. But here in the UK, the big kind of brewery that was making an impact was Camden Hells and Camden Lager. And they, when we started, they were still relatively small. And in the period from 2014, when we started our business to now, they have grown at a huge, at ridiculous rate of actually, and now being acquired by AB InBev. So we've always admired what they've done. And they tell their story really well. Their liquid is fantastic, but very easy drinking and accessible. And they've been able to make a huge impact in the business. And it was so as we were starting out, it was a really cool business to be able to kind of compare ourselves to and look at what they were doing.
You mentioned, easy drinkable, easy and drinkable, let's say, with the lagers and the pilsners. I want to talk more about the styles of beer in a second, but, you know, looking at the first few years of your company and comparing that to rugby, you know, what's been harder? What was harder, a rugby career or starting a business?
I would say the early years of a rugby career is tough. Making your way through sort of that tricky stage of winning that first contract and being under huge amounts of pressure, I think that's an extremely tough period of time. But then once you get into the groove and you find your way, then the rugby career, you know, you get that experience and things become slightly easier. And I think that's probably the same with business. You know, the first 2, 3, 4 years were really tricky because we were trying to balance the rugby and the beer. And we actually brought someone in who basically ran the whole business really for us day to day. So, you know, they're quite comparable, actually, you know, it's those early stages of that, both really exciting, interesting times starting out in your rugby career and the business, but they're challenging. And then as you get more experience, you start to sort of find efficiencies in how you operate.
So over here, breweries, craft breweries, they all really support each other well. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume that's the same over there.
Absolutely.
So what is it that makes you stand out from them? Have you tried to stand out from them, or just, you know, you don't need, no need to reinvent the wheel also?
No. We've always wanted to tell our story, which we think is interesting, having played professional sport and what we've learnt from rugby and the ethos of team sports, mm-hmm. and what we learnt at Saracens in terms of a sort of people-centred approach, and how people, when people come together and are sociable and have conversations, I think the best things happen, both, you know, intellectually and socially. And so we've always tried to sort of stay true to that story. And so in that regard, I think we're potentially, our background is a little bit different to most craft breweries. But, you know, we're also at a stage where we're not really trying to compete or compare ourselves to anyone. We think we've got a really great product. We're now opening up more bars and pubs as well, where we feel like we can really, our brand and the kind of customer journey can have its biggest effect in a retail space rather than just on tap in someone else's pub. And I think we've done a pretty good job at the brand and the feel of it and the tone of it. So, and then I think underpinning everything, as I'm kind of repeating myself, but underpinning everything is just wanting everyone to be social and to come together over great, easy drinking beer. And I think that's what we do pretty well at Wolfpack.
So when I come over, hopefully next year, obviously, I assume a free pint for me. But
ten.
Well, hold on. We got to talk about, you have a BPH or something like that.
Yeah.
I was doing research. So what the heck is a BPH?
Beers per hour.
Come on. So is that based on rugby size? Because 3.6 is like a wing maybe, and six is a prop.
there's a few little like acronyms that we throw into the branding that you have to kind of work out, but yeah, just a bit of fun, just a bit of a change up.
I was wondering if that was some government restriction or something, but
well, like Alistair has a way of as you can imagine, he's 6'7", he's East African, he can just sit there and drink one beer after another without it really touching the sides. But he's just very consistent, just consistently can knock down lagers, whereas I can deal with that up to a point, but then I tend to probably get a bit more erratic. That's why we threw the beers per hour in.
That's brilliant. So again, going back, so when I walk in, or when just a regular customer walks in the first time, what's the experience like for me? You know, what should I expect?
You'd expect a really social atmosphere, and you'd think most pubs and bars do have that, but really easygoing, anything goes. The community comes in, your dog can come in. You've got all different ages, all different types of people, and good conversation, good beer is essentially it.
Oh, I'm sold. Going into the COVID pandemic, were there plans, expansion plans, whatnot, that have been on hold or maybe been canceled?
Yeah, we actually opened our second bar 6 weeks before lockdown here in the UK, which was on March 22nd, I believe. And that was a bit of a hit, but that was we sort of, as discussed earlier, we managed to get through that. And we still have plans to expand. So we still are in a positive position to grow out our bar estate. And we're looking to add more Wolfpacks in different parts of London, and different parts of community areas in London. So, yeah, we're very much still zeroed into the idea of expanding.
So looking at locations, you know, going back to when the premiership was coming down on the Saracens, there was, I believe there was one or two clubs that you were selling at their stadium. And I don't know, from my side, it seemed a bit Bush League. You know, they were just trying to get back at Nigel. They pulled your beer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what effect did that have on you? I mean, that's your livelihood, your company. Mm-hmm. You know, was there any effect on you because of that?
Yeah, look, I suppose that the whole scenario around Saracens was tough, and that was a kind of another kind of little kind of twist in the side. But it ultimately didn't have a huge effect on us in terms of the business, but it did from a, as you say, your word, Bush League. It just didn't really, for us, it didn't feel like the ethos of rugby. It felt like, you know, whilst there were some difficulties around Saracens and what was going on there, it didn't mean that, as people, as you know, in the rugby community is super supportive, just like you said, that Brewers are.
Yeah.
And so I think to kind of publicly come out the way they did and pull the beer was, it wasn't ideal. But you know, these things, these are the kind of setbacks you have in business and the ups and downs. And, but to answer, you know, the main question, it wasn't a business critical account, but it certainly was, you know, it psychologically was a bit of a tricky one to deal with.
All right, let's talk about your beer selection. What styles do you brew and why these styles?
So we have Wolfpack Lager, which is our first lager. And it's a German-style lager, got a Tettnang hop. And we wanted it to be a pretty punchy ABV, so we initially brought it out as a 5.2%. And we brought it down to 5. And we really, our view was that we wanted to focus on lagers because we felt that was a really accessible space, but we also needed the lagers to be challenging and interesting. So that was kind of the remit around Wolfpack Lager. And it's pretty bold, flavorsome lager. As I say, it's got that German, the German style to it as well. So it's a really interesting lager. Our second brew was the Pilsner. So in reaction to Wolfpack Lager, we wanted something that was even more accessible than the lager, the Wolfpack Lager, and it's Czech style Pilsner, Sars hop, 4.4%, and it's really clean, crisp, and easy to drink. What's nice for us is we go in there and it's just nice to have that option of something a bit more punchy and a bit more strong and flavoursome, and then something that you can, you know, I wouldn't call it table beer, but it's 4.4%. It's just a bit easier. Get through. So and then we've also brought out we've now kind of ventured into the IPA space as well, which has been great for us, under 4% as well. Wow. And then there are potential plans of looking at an even lower ABV lager and potentially a dark lager as well. So
these are kind of like sessions.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
keep so now I start to understand the 3.6 beers an hour when you have just
4.4%. Yeah, exactly. what's your go-to?
Oh, the opposite. What's big over here now are the hazy double IPAs.
Okay.
You know, New England styles are called. So they're 7 to 9%. No. So I can't have 3-4 in an hour. I mean, even though I'm a big guy, I'd be on my butt somewhere. But obviously I'd love a good lager and a Pilsner, but over here, right now, really big, especially in the Boston area, are the New England IPAs.
Yeah.
It's extremely citrusy. They get their hops from the Northwest, the Citra hops. They look really like grapefruit juice.
Yeah. And those styles are kicking around London as well. There's lots of really interesting, you know, the craft beer market here in London now is booming and has had a lot of growth and a lot of creativity and loads of interesting, really weird and wonderful beers. But we rather felt that we wanted to focus on the more session accessible style of beers because the motivation, the purpose of our business is really about bringing people together and socializing. And so I think sometimes with these, and this is just our opinion, with the really strong, super flavorsome beers, that there's a time and place for them, absolutely. But we think that the session beers really allow for that really heightened sociability.
Yeah.
Through time, and you know, we want you to come into Wolfpack and stay in there for 3-4 hours and go off and have weird and wonderful conversations about life and meet loads of people and, you know, and bring that togetherness. So that's kind of the motivation behind that.
And we have, you know, specifically I know these because I live in the area, but the 3 or 4 breweries out of hundreds in New England right now, they're like cult followings. You know, you can't buy their beers in the stores, you can't get them in pubs. You have to go to the location. And there's one for me called Treehouse, which is about an hour and 40-minute drive. And people will drive that. They'll order online. They'll get in line when they get there and pick it up by the case. And it's like $120 a case of beer.
Wow.
And these are, you know, I pay that money because I think these are phenomenal beers. But these breweries have this cult following. There's a place called Alchemist way up in Vermont that people go out of their way to get the beer from. And, you know, is there something like that in the London area, maybe, at least? Or there is that going on as well?
Yeah, absolutely. It's it took its time to, and potentially, you know, it may not have the same awareness, but it's certainly getting there. And as I say, the craft beer market has had huge amounts of growth, and there are some very niche, small breweries who do amazing products that people feel very passionately about. So yeah, that scene is definitely alive here in London and the UK, actually. You also hear more and more of it spreading into you know, different parts of England, from Cornwall to Manchester. So there's lots of interesting breweries kicking around.
So did Al try to import some South African hops?
No, he didn't, actually. In South Africa, a lot of what they drink, Castle Light, I think, which is like a super out of the bottle as well, making sure it's kept cold because obviously super hot there, like clean, crisp, and easy drinking. And a lot of the South Africans who come over, someone like Skoltberger, you talk about beers per hour. That man is like a machine. I don't know what his beers per hour. He's probably got the record for beers per hour, but he just sits down with an easy drinking lager and just drinks through them. So, the craft beer scene's getting bigger in South Africa, but they come from a world where they just like drinking easy, on the whole, bit of a generalization, but easy drinking lagers.
Yeah.
And actually Al though, he does enjoy the weird and wonderful beers. So he's always bringing in different, you know, different weird beers. We've got a few Belgian beers actually on tap at our place.
Yeah.
So some good options there as well. So we don't just serve Wolfpack. We bring in other products that we think are really good. There's one, for example, called Gypsy Hill, which is potentially close to that kind of following that you're talking about. Maybe not like people traveling from all over. Well, actually, you know, they're not far off. They've got a decent cult following, I'd say.
That's great.
At our place.
Well, you know, when you go to those hotter climates, you know, or at least when we go to southern United States, I'm not drinking heavy beers. You know, you're outside in the heat, you want a nice lager, something lighter just to get by. Just no playing a round of golf with a bunch of Guinness. Nah, not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
So with Guinness on mind, you have or had a collaboration with them.
I'm losing track of time now, but I think that was the last Six Nations. We just got into some really good conversations around, obviously, the connection with rugby, and they wanted to collaborate over a beer and bring the Guinness ingredients and amalgamate them with our ingredients, and it came together, and we went over to Dublin on a couple of trips, met the master brewer there, talked through the recipes. And had a brilliant moment when the liquid was ready to go, and it was in London. It had been shipped to London, the Guinness head brewer came on his way to doing a trip to Africa. He's very well sought after, so he's not just a brewer, but he's also part of the PR machine.
Yeah.
And his name Peter, and he came and he gave us the Gladiator, kind of the final sign off on the liquid, whether he thought it was good enough quality.
Oh yeah,
like watching him going, oh, like that, and gave us a thumbs up. And so we end up creating this dark lager, really interesting flavour. We put it on tap in some selected outlets here in London and in our bar, and it just sold really well. And then obviously the connotations to rugby and having that relationship with Guinness was an awesome experience for us, and seeing how they work and how they put together brands, and you know, it was a really fascinating experience, and it was awesome to have that come out during the Six Nations.
Yeah, and congrats on that. So what kind of beer drinker are you, Chris? Are you the wine drinker where it's, you know, you got the nose, you got the front end, back end, where you know every level? And I'm not saying it in a bad way. Or are you the, you know what, it's I just had a tough day, give me a pint, let's sit down and relax.
Yeah, I'm the latter for sure. I completely appreciate the brewing scene and the weird and wonderful beers, But in all honesty, the thing that I really enjoy is sitting with some mates or at home with just a nice pint of lager. And it's just the social aspect of it that is the kind of really gets me going.
So we've been talking a lot of beer, which is obviously huge. Let's talk a little bit of rugby. So
yeah, other than rugby.
Yeah, just a little bit, just, you know, so it's a tax write off. No. So other than that, that one off, that one match you played for Saracens, you know, coming off from retirement, have you done anything at all with rugby since then?
No. And I sort of said to myself, once I retired, I mean, I love football, I love soccer. So I've played lots of football and soccer, five-a-side, a few 11-a-side games, mainly five-a-side. I try to play every week if I can. But I did say to myself, once I retired playing rugby, it's kind of interesting. My appetite to running into people and the physical side to it is kind of diminished pretty considerably. And I think the other thing for me is I feel so fortunate to have been injury-free for the majority of my career. The last thing I want to do is go and play club rugby and get injured.
Yeah.
I'd love to get all of the social side of it and get to meet loads of awesome people. But I don't have to be honest with you. I am not interested in getting back on the rugby pitch.
Well, you know, soccer's physical too. There's never that get back out there and go to tackle somebody. You don't do that.
Yeah, it's true. There's more like bad leg injuries, I'd say, in football than our rugby. So yeah, no, you're right. But that's probably where I get my fix, my competitive fix, my physical fix is playing five-a-side. I just absolutely love it, and it's something I never was able to do with rugby. So I'm sort of trying to get as much in as I can.
Barbarians, was that option ever offered to you? Because I did my part trying to get you on that team, even though apparently I don't have any weight. They don't hold anything. I tried. Was it ever offered?
No, it wasn't actually, and it would have been something I would have loved to have played in. Of course, I think anyone was to be involved in that. So, yeah, it's one of the unfortunate boxes I wasn't able to tick during my rugby career. Yeah. So maybe I'll try and get fit for that. To be almost 40-year-old winger coming back and playing the Barbarians, I don't know.
I think you can get away with that on the wing, though.
Yeah, you probably could, actually. You're probably right.
All right, so what's next for you? Once we're past COVID, you know, what's next for you and your company?
Yeah, I mean, and I think the light is there at the end of the tunnel. So we're hoping to continue to get Wolfpack into the London's hands, really, more than anything. But really via opening up more Wolfpack bars and pubs. And, you know, the great thing about being involved in a business like Wolfpack is you actually get to go into, like, make an impact into these communities. And it's something that you're hearing a lot about at the minute is the what hospitality does anyway here in the UK in terms of how important they are in communities and people coming together and having pints and being social, and how difficult people have found it being isolated at home. So the fact that we can potentially play a small part of that and grow the Wolfpack brand and get more bars open and more beers into people's hands and different bars and would just be a lovely thing to be able to do, especially after all the kind of isolation that we've had through COVID. So, just trying to support the business as best as possible to expand in that way.
Well, Chris, good luck with all that. If you're ever able to airmail some, I'll give you my address.
Okay.
You know, test it out. They won't know. Throw in some socks or something.
You could. We don't ship internationally quite yet. It's something we need to get on. But yeah, you, more importantly, you need to make your way to London and come sit, again, COVID-free, come sit in Queen's Park or West Hampstead and just have a lovely ice-cold Wolfpack Pilsner. Or lager.
Or both locations.
Either or both, way. Yeah. And then I promise you there'll be some free pints for you.
Brilliant. Well, Chris, thanks again. And I'm hoping to talk to you at some point again down the road.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, cheers.
Cheers.